I'm standing to be the next MP for this area because I'm an adopted Camdener, as it were. I've moved here 7 years ago from university, and I really do care very passionately about this area. And this is an opportunity, I think, for me to give something back to the community that I've really fallen in love with.
OK, I'm trying to do basic mathematics here. That puts you under 30?
Just. I'm hitting the big 3-0 in March next year, so I'm dreading that. But yes, I'm just under 30.
An MP recently said that nobody should become an MP until they were, was it 50?
Yeah, there's a very good argument, I think, to say that, you know, you should only go into politics once you've had some life experience and worked in all sorts of jobs and done this, that and the other, which is, there is something in that. But I think, you know, politics has not a great reputation at all, particularly amongst younger people. And whilst, of course, older people will give more experience and more perspective, perhaps, younger people, I think, are able to, you know, engage with other young people. And we do need politics to be a mixture of youth and enthusiastic and engaging experience.
It fits in with the recent Scottish referendum where young people of 16 were given the vote for the first time. There have been calls to extend that to the general election. Do you think that that would engage young people more?
I think that's one step in the right direction, and that was a fascinating experience, the Scottish referendum, to see so many young people really engaged in politics, and also people who'd never voted before, people who didn't really like politics, you know, getting involved with their community, having a say, having a debate with their friends and family about the future of their country and their community. I thought that was a wonderful experience to watch that, you know, as an English person from down south. And I think actually we need to learn the lessons of that referendum. And I think extending the franchise to 16 and 17-year-olds is a good step in the right direction.
What do you think the lessons are, though?
I think the lessons are that if you trust young people with, you know, to have a say and have an influence on their community and their wider country, then they take that responsibility seriously, and it sends a very strong message that, you know, government and politicians who always seem so remote actually do care, and above all else, will have to listen to young people because, you know, young people can effectively, you know, make or break their careers by voting them in or voting them out.
In that case, it wasn't just young people. It was across the board, all ages informing themselves. How on earth can we replicate that?
It's not easy, and of course the Scottish referendum was a kind of a one-off event, really. It's not like a normal kind of, you know, day-to-day local election or even a general election, because that was very much about a decision that the Scottish people were taking that was going to affect not just their lives but the lives of their children and grandchildren and so forth. There was a wonderful big debate in Glasgow. It was on a Thursday night. They broadcast it, and it had tens of thousands of school children across Scotland coming in to debate and to discuss you know, their future. And you had George Galloway and Ruth Davidson, Nicola Sturgeon, and the leader of the Green Party in Scotland debating. And it was, I think, it was one of the widest mass discussions about the future of Scotland, and it had so many young people really engaged. And that was, for me, that was one of the highlights of the referendum campaign.
Surely it was because it was something much more tangible, whereas people just don't feel the same about Europe, do they? A lot of people just don't feel that they belong.
The European Union is an institution that I think many people feel very distant from, very detached from, and it's definitely in need of reform, because people don't feel that they, you know, any voice and vote that they have doesn't actually influence European policy. So that's one institution that certainly does need to be more democratically accountable. But I think, you know, before we tackle Europe, I think we need to kind of look closer to home and look at Westminster, and really start tackling some of the issues that make people feel so disenfranchised from the whole political system.
Such as?
Well, such as what methods we should use to tackle that.
Come up with a plan.
Well, I think it starts with local politics, actually. If you think that, I've stood for election here in Camden a number of times before as a local candidate, and the average turnout for voting in local elections is about 30%, sort of one in three. Only one in three people in Camden decide to vote for their local councillors. And I think that's also because they don't feel the council really well. It's not very exciting, it's a bit boring, deals with rubbish in the streets and things like that. But actually, if Westminster gives more power to local authorities, like Camden, to have a far bigger say in how their communities run. I think that needs to be communicated properly to people. That will demonstrate that actually, you know, decision making is made locally, and if you participate and vote in elections locally, you really can have a big influence on the way your communities run.
Talk me through how you two manage the balance, keeping a job, campaigning, because if all goes wrong in the general election, you will have to have your job still in place.
To be honest, you know, to do the justice to this job, you know, being a parliamentary candidate for Holborn and St Pancras, I mean, I could be working, you know, sort of 40, 50 hour weeks really just on this, you know, let alone my job. So how do I balance it? Well, I work for a public relations agency based down in Holborn, and they're a very good employer, and they understand that I've got, you know, quite a big interest in politics, and they are very supportive of their employees having an extracurricular, you know, life, balancing work and home responsibilities. So I was very honest with them at the very beginning. I said, this is what I want to do, and I'm hoping to be nominated the candidate. So they have been relatively flexible with me. I'm still working full-time, but for instance, I was speaking at a planning hearing in Camden to save a local pub called the Golden Lion in Somerstown, and I was able, that was 10 till midday in the morning, and I said to my boss, look, this is a really important issue for me, I'd really like to be there, I've been asked to be there to support the campaign, and that was fine. But I'm lucky, I suppose. There are probably a lot of people who have jobs that actually, even if their employers are instinctively supportive, you know, you can't just, you know, take half a day off here and there.
Are there any restrictions on your use of social media? I know some companies worry about tweeting in your own name or the company's name.
Absolutely, yes. Well, I'm no social media expert. I'm on Twitter and Facebook, and I do enjoy it. But my company would give advice to organisations about the best practice use of social media. We have a social media team. They're all very trendy, and we're skinny jeans and things like that, much cooler than me. But my understanding of, you know, how you should deal with social media is just use common sense, really. People put in their biographies and on their Twitter page, you know, I'm, you know, my own views or whatever. I mean, I don't put that because I think, well, I'm a parliamentary candidate, obviously they're my own views. I'm not speaking on behalf of my employer, although when I'm speaking as a parliamentary candidate, I suppose I'm speaking on behalf of the Conservative Party. So you know, I have to obviously make sure anything I tweet and anything I say in public is kind of carefully considered. But no, I mean, I'm very much, it doesn't have a link to my employer's website or anything like that. So I'm very ostensibly, clearly, you know, speaking as a political figure rather than an employee.
So just a bit of background here. Where did you actually grow up? Not in London?
No, I'm not from London. I grew up in a place called Weymouth in Dorset, on the English Riviera, as I like to call it. It's a lovely part of the world, and I was very lucky to grow up in an area like that. I went to my local primary and secondary schools, state schools in Weymouth, and then went on from there to university. And then after university, I moved to London, basically.
Where were you at university?
I was at Oxford University, which was, one of the greatest achievements of my life, actually, to get into Oxford. I, you know, come from a, you know, relatively ordinary family. Both my parents were teachers. They'd always, being teachers, they'd always instilled in me the importance of education as a means to, you know, to improve your life and to make the best of things for yourself and your family. And they'd always had great aspirations that, you know, they were the first people in their family to go to university, and went to university in Wales, actually, back in the 70s. And I think my mum always, you know, she said, oh, I wish I'd applied to Oxford. And she said, I'd love, you know, you to give it a go. And so when I got in, I was obviously had a very proud mum, and I was, you know, very pleased myself. But I didn't expect it at all, because, you know, ordinary state school in Weymouth, and quite a contrast to the dreaming spires of Oxford.
So on the one hand, you become quite a typical Conservative candidate, having had these educational background. On the other hand, you can promote yourself as, well, I pulled myself up by my socks, or, you know, my bootstraps, whatever the expression is. Where do you sit with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose people would look at me and say, yes, you know, posh boy, went to Oxford, you know, white guy, you know, of course he's a Tory. Weymouth is an interesting place. It's people think, oh, it's on the south coast, it must be a very affluent part of the world, and it's not really. Dorset and the wider southwest has got similar levels of unemployment and, you know, economic deprivation to places in the northwest and the northeast of England and other parts of this country, because it doesn't really have an economy except tourism, which is of course a seasonal economy. When I was not at school, or school holidays and university vacations, I worked at a local campsite in Weymouth as a receptionist, and I've done a number of other sort of part-time jobs during that time. I was a security guard, believe it or not. A lot of my friends find that hilarious. I've never had any kind of big handouts or a big kind of wealthy family to draw on.
And presumably, having the Oxford education, you were courted when you wanted to go into graduate jobs, didn't you?
Well, it's a good question, actually. And I think, for me, getting into Oxford, that was sort of the be-all and end-all, really. And after that, I just thought, well, I don't even know. I've achieved what I wanted to achieve. And I thought, oh, yes, I've got a rest of a life to lead. And I just assumed that there would be, a milk round, I suppose, of big companies coming to me, to be employed. That was 2007 when I left, so that was pre the recession. But I had, I had a rather rude awakening, really, actually. There were, so many other talented graduates out there. The competition for graduate jobs then was immense. I put in sort of 20, 30 applications and sometimes got to the final round interview, sometimes didn't even get close. And I ended up getting a graduate job at the General Medical Council, which is the doctors regulator for England and Wales, and they're based in Regent's Park, just down on Euston Road. And that was sort of what brought me to this area, and I was very fortunate to get that. But my hat goes off to any graduate trying to start today, because particularly since the recession, a lot of these big companies have scaled back on their recruitment. I think things are picking up now, but it's an immensely challenging market.
And you came to London for the job. You liked Camden. You decided to live here. Did you go through the experience that other graduates are finding now, that they leave university and they find it very difficult to afford accommodation?
Yes, well, I'm glad you've asked that, because, if there's one thing I would like to campaign on most during my time between now and the election, it is the issue of housing. I can't say that I am a poor man. I can't say that I'm, an underprivileged man. I've had a lot of great opportunities. I earn a reasonable salary at a very good employer down in Holborn. But the idea of me buying a house in this constituency, this constituency I hope to represent, is pie in the sky. It's just not going to happen.
Never mind the housing ladder. One of the issues in this borough, as you're well aware, is renters' rights. Mm. And we have to accept to a certain extent that renting is going to be the way, but the rents are so high. Mm. And the other problem is that landlords can't always be relied on to go ahead with repairs, and have been known to evict people when they complain too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been very fortunate in terms of the landlords that I've had. I've lived in a number of rented properties, throughout Camden over the last 7 years. I've been very fortunate that my landlords have always been pretty responsive and pretty good on things like repairs. But I certainly, when I've been campaigning in the area and talking to people, this is an issue that does keep coming up. And it's not just private landlords. There's a number of council tenants in Camden as well who often have a big complaint against the council that the works department is very slow to come out and fix things. And they're not sort of like, would it be nice to have this fixed? It's quite fundamental things, showers not working, or hot water being turned off suddenly out of the blue, or heating and things like that. And particularly for elderly and more vulnerable people, this is really important.
You won't just be working on local issues, you'll be working on national issues should you get in. So what do you think about the state of the party now in terms of the threat from UKIP? How would you manage that?
It's very interesting that I've been campaigning across the country. I've supported other MP candidates. I don't just campaign around here, but the threat, UKIP is very, it's almost non-existent here in Camden, and I think that's a very good thing, because we are a very multicultural constituency, and we are an exemplar of how, loads of people from different backgrounds, loads of different immigrant communities, people of different beliefs, different countries have come here and made a wonderful community, a really cohesive community. and have basically said, actually, there's no place for a party that says, you know, we're scared of foreigners, we're scared of people who come from outside. And I think we should be the example to the rest of the country, actually, to say, you know what, immigration is an important issue that needs to be, you know, needs to be managed and needs to be dealt with sensitively. But you know, the answer is not to suddenly pull up the drawbridge and say, let's get out of Europe, let's cut off the immigration, you know, coming into this country. And we need to be champions and proud of the values and the benefits that immigration has brought to Hove and St Pancras and Camden, and London in general.